Midlands Today on Midlands 103 with O'Brien's Mullingar. The all-new Renault Kadjar. Start living. POBrien.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Well, good morning. How are you today? I'd love to tell you what's coming up over the next 2 hours, but there's a problem. Genuine problem. You didn't give me the running order, the correct running order, so Miss Hubble, the producer, has handed me the sheet that says Will Faulkner arrives late again, followed by Will Faulkner doesn't get his newspapers because he upset his producer. And there are words on this that I could not possibly say on the radio at 13 minutes past nine on a Thursday morning. But suffice to say, it's a bit of a magical mystery what's coming up today. When her ladyship decides to drop in the running order, I shall share it with you. However, I can tell you that you don't hit me. Please don't
hit.
Thank you. What is coming up today is your chance to win tickets to the Tullamore Show, which is back on the 14th of August, Sunday week, in the Butterfield Estate with the Gar the Band, Olivia Douglas, that's just on the music side. They have the Craft Village, the Food Pavilions, the Trade Stands, the whole kit and caboodle. And all you need to do is become caller of the day. 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Now, what have we got today? Personal injuries, which can be a very expensive part of insurance payouts. Minister Robert Troy will be here to explain how he is overhauling the Personal Injuries Assessment Board. Also, we will be looking at the latest technology developments as Apple outlines its plan to get rid of passwords for good. How can you have online accounts without passwords? Nevin Maguire is here after 11 on That's Life with Brian Cunningham. And we catch up on businesses in Mullingar. Some absolutely booming with Flakjol na Héireann. Others a little bit quieter, but they're pivoting, they're changing, they're evolving. They're trying to cash in other ways. So that's all on the way between now and 12. What have we got on the front of the Irish Independent this morning? It says up to 10 years in jail for stalkers under new laws. Now, the classic image of the stalker, the guy in the trench coat, hanging around dark corners, following people. This covers that, yes, but it also covers online stalking. The far more pernicious and subtle forms of tracking somebody or pestering somebody, and it's not going to be tolerated. The law will give judges scope to put people away for 10 years if they're convicted. Cork woman Una Ring, she describes, for instance, how a former colleague threatened to break into her house and rape her. She's welcoming the plan, and she says, who knows, if that law had been available, the incident may have been nipped in the bud, and a lot of fear and a lot of heartache may have been avoided. That's the main story on The Independent. The Irish Daily Star covers the events in Mountjoy as a prisoner was savagely beaten last Friday and subsequently died of head injuries. This is Robert O'Connor, who was 34, in a cell in Mountjoy, where he was set upon by three others. And it is suggested in some of the papers that it was over a very, very small debt. But he is now the subject of an investigation by the prison services to how this attack was allowed to take place. And then on the Irish Times, good news if you are Minister for Finance Pascal Donoghue. A record tax take boosts finances ahead of the budget. So he'll have more options, as will the government widely, have more options to quell the cost of living and to, in effect, buy more votes. That's what tends to happen when we have an excess in the government coffers. What have we got inside the papers? Yes, Miriam Margolyes, or Margoyles, or anyway, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. Miriam, if you're listening, please correct me. She is one of the most hilarious people on the planet. She has no filter. She says what she thinks, and she expresses it so brilliantly. And a lot of people will know her as Professor Sprout in Harry Potter, but also she has appeared on The Graham Norton Show on many an occasion and has given us a brilliant laugh. And yesterday she popped into a cafe in County Offaly in Shannon Bridge, and she was welcomed by the staff of the River Cafe. And why she is in Ireland, I'm not quite sure. We have to find this out because I believe she is on tour. Where she is off to next, would love to talk to Miriam. She is an absolute character. Now, Liz Truss, different character altogether. She is the front runner to be the next British Prime Minister. And according to the latest polls of Conservative Party members, she's a dead cert. She is between 32 and 34 points ahead of Rishi Sunak. And her latest target has been the First Minister of Wales. A few days ago, she had a big pop at Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland, saying she was an attention seeker who is best ignored. She's called the Welsh First Minister a low-energy version of Jeremy Corbyn and has had quite a pop at him. Yes. Don't put your phone on loud when you come into a radio studio, Faulkner. Put it on silent. Now, anyway. So, Jeremy Corbyn, as you know, was the Labour Party leader up until about 3 years ago, and he was obviously an unpopular character in the Conservatives. And Mark Drakeford, the First Minister of Wales, has been lumped into the same category. So she's playing to the gallery. She's talking to the audience that's going to elect her as the next Prime Minister, ultimately. And she believes she's well equipped to fight off the next election against Keir Starmer, a plastic patriot. She's very much into her slagging and name-calling. Soaring inflation, covered in the Irish Independent today, but from a different perspective. We always assume if prices are going up, well, it must be to do with the war in Ukraine, or it must be because of COVID. It must be because the materials that make the product or supply the service, that they are more expensive. Not necessarily so, says Derek Bridge from the University College Cork. He's talking about algorithms. So let's say ABC company wants to undercut XYZ company by selling at a price that is 99% of the price charged by XYZ. They have a computer program that constantly monitors the price charged by XYZ. But company XYZ, on the other hand, might trade on its reputation, on its brand, on being a premium outlet. And so they feel they can sell at 10% higher than company ABC. And their algorithm constantly monitors the other and make sure their price is that bit ahead. And so what you have, because the two computer systems don't talk to each other, is this constant race upwards. And he says this is quite common in a lot of industries. It might not happen with, for instance, airlines or hotels, but it's very, very common in online products. So is that part of our inflationary problem, algorithmic pricing? There's one for I suppose, who wants to be a millionaire quiz? Algorithmic pricing. Every day is a school day. Never heard of it before. Now, how do we solve the housing crisis? This has been debated for the best part of a decade now. And Glenveagh, which is one of the largest developers in the country, has submitted its own plans to the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien. And it recommends a very simple change. That at the moment, if you're building houses back to back, there must be 22 metres from one back door to the other back door. And this goes back to the 1900s when you had to allow for outdoor toilets, storage of solid fuel, some vegetable growing. But here we are in the 21st century. Do we need 22 metres from back door to back door? They say no. They're recommending it be reduced to 16 metres, which would allow for more dense developments, also narrower streets, and all of this would contribute to building more houses in a smaller amount of area. And ultimately, no doubt, higher profits for Glenveagh and other developers like them. They say it's a game changer. Is it a gimmick? You tell me. Happy man is Shane Lowry, pictured in the Star today, holding aloft his golf clubs, which went missing when he flew from Dublin Airport to Greensboro in North Carolina. But the club somehow decided to go to Chicago, which is rather further away. And yesterday, just before 1 o'clock Irish time, he tweeted a picture of himself with his golf clubs. And he said, thank you to everybody who helped get these back before the opening round. Aer Lingus, rather cleverly, since he had compared the whole episode to Father Ted, and you see Ted and Dougal holding the signs down with that sort of thing, they've changed the writing on the signs to good to hear. Now go and win the thing. So, all in good spirits, all's well that ends well. Hopefully it doesn't throw him, it didn't limit his practice ahead of the tournament, and we wish him all the best. He's at Sedgefield Golf Club, where he is participating in the Wyndham Championship, in case you are curious. Brendan Boyer was laid to rest yesterday. No, you're not caught in some strange time warp. Brendan Boyer, the show band legend, he died in 2020 at the age of 81. However, he passed away in the United States, and his family always wished for him to be laid to rest alongside his parents in Dunmore East in County Waterford. But because of the COVID-19 pandemic, his wife Stella and their children had been unable to bring his remains home. So only yesterday did he finally get his farewell in Dunmore East. And there are pictures in the Sun newspaper this morning. If you're a Brendan Boyer fan, you can read more there. Kerry GAA is a little embarrassed. Not because of anything they did, but because of how they have been portrayed online, and wrongly portrayed, they say. And there were some videos doing the rounds where players were holding up Visa cards and chanting about the bag. And everybody assumed in the comments, oh, they must be after a bag of, well, not the sort of stuff you can talk about on the radio this hour of the morning. But suffice to say, the Kerry GAA totally reject any assertion of drugs taking against the players. And the real explanation is that the chairman of the Kerry County Board, a chap by the name of Patrick O'Sullivan, back in the 1980s, he used to carry his gear bag to games. It was a distinctive bag, and so his nickname ever since the 1980s is The Bag. And so you're wondering, well, how come the players were holding up their credit cards? They, after the All-Ireland final, had a round of credit card roulette to figure out who was going to buy the next round of drinks. And Mr. O'Sullivan lost that round, so he had to buy a round of drinks for the whole squad. And that's why they were chanting his name, The Bag, holding up the credit card. So Chinese whispers, they really propagate online. And Kerry GAA says nothing whatsoever to do with drugs. But it did get me thinking, which is dangerous always at this hour of the morning, what sort of nicknames really stand out as being clever or funny or innovative or original or creative? Something, again, to give us a laugh on a Thursday morning. Maybe there's a backstory that is even funnier than the nickname itself. And especially, I know, in Clonbloag, where I live, it's a great area for nicknames. I've no idea what mine is. Probably better off not finding out. But if you've heard of clever nicknames, if you've got a clever nickname, now is the time to share on 083 3010 103. You could end up as caller of the day. By the way, weather-wise, final one for you. We're looking at temperatures next week. 23 to 25 degrees. Still plenty of road left in the summer. Monday will be the driest day. Good sunny spells. Be a little bit cloudier as the week goes on. But certainly no sign of heavy rain on the horizon. The odd cloud, the odd shower, but absolutely pleasant otherwise. So we'll take that with both hands. Thank you very much. The more things change, the more they stay the same. 20 years ago, Donny Cassidy was campaigning in the general election in County Westmeath and said the issue of insurance costs kept coming up again and again and again. And he was later appointed by Bertie Ahern to take on the insurance industry through the Oireachtas Business and Enterprise Committee. He vowed to bring down costs by 30%. And one of the areas in which he attempted to do this was in personal injury reform. 2 decades later, his political successor is Robert Troy, now the Longford Westmeath Fianna Fáil TD and Minister of State for Trade Promotion, Digital and Company Regulation. Minister, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, you're announcing a reform through the Personal Injuries Resolution Board Bill. Can you explain what that intends to do, please?
Yeah. Well, look, this is part of this government's drive in the whole area of insurance reform. A lot of the key priorities in the action plan have already been delivered, and this is the next step in bringing down insurance premiums for all. We know that the Personal Injuries Board was established back in 2004, and in that time it has been successful in dealing with claims efficiently and in a cost-effective manner. In fact, the Central Bank published a report in June gone by, the National Claims Information Database, which showed that on average the length of time to have a legitimate claim dealt with through PIAB was 1.8 years, while it's going through litigation was 4.5 years. The legal fees associated with having a claim dealt with through PIAB was only €562. The legal fees on average of having a claim dealt with through litigation was €18,290. So you can see such a huge disparity. So it was obvious that we needed to enhance reform at PIAB, and that's what we're doing now. We're renaming it the Personal Injuries Resolution Board and we're broadening its remit. Essentially, what we're doing is, for the first time, we will offer mediation as a means of resolving a claim. We know that mediation works quite well in the WRC, works well with the PRTB, the Financial Ombudsman. Claims previously of a wholly psychological nature couldn't be dealt with. We're changing that. Previously, complex claims weren't dealt with through PIAB. They were released to litigation. So we're allowing additional time, up to 24 months additional time, to access a claim where an injury is yet to settle. It'll become an offence to provide false or misleading information to the PIRB. And we're enabling it to deepen its analysis of the data that it's collecting, because there's, you know, on average, there's thousands of claims going through PIAB annually. That provides a wealth of data, and the data that it provides is going to help PIAB, or the PIRB as it will now be known, to provide information in terms of how to reduce claims, and also use their role in a public information role to ensure that people are aware of the benefits of having a legitimate claim dealt with through the PIRB rather than going through litigation.
Let's pick up another that last point, because there is a perception, rightly or wrongly, and maybe you'll have the data to dispute this, that going through the courts may incur larger legal costs but will also result in larger settlements.
And the data is there to prove it. The difference is only marginal. You're talking a couple of €100 on average in terms of what's been awarded through PIAB and what's been awarded through litigation. And, of course, one of the big changes that the government introduced last year was the personal injury guidelines. So we now have guidelines in place for specific claims, whether it be soft tissue, whiplash, a broken ankle, a broken arm. There is guidelines in place, and the PIRB will be working to the exact same guidelines as the courts will be. So there's absolutely no financial benefit from the point of view of getting a larger compensation going through litigation, but there is additional legal fees. And in that context, based on the Attorney General's advice, this bill now proposes to amend Section 51A of the PIAB Act to provide that an assessment that has been accepted by a respondent, and the respondent normally is the insurance company, will have the status of an offer of tender payment as of the date the respondent accepted the assessment, where the claimant proceeds to litigation, where the court award...
What does that mean in a nutshell, Minister?
I'm just finishing off. Where the court award is not greater than the PIAB assessment, the claimant will not recover their costs and will generally be liable for the respondent's costs as well. So what we don't want to do, given, as I said, that the personal injury guidelines have been enacted, they're in force, they provide clarity and they provide consistency. And what this section of the bill is intended to provide, a deterrent from proceeding to litigation unnecessarily.
What is the role of the legal industry in this? Because if you go to your solicitor, and it will be the first port of call for most people after they've been injured, it's in the solicitor's interest, surely, to direct you through the courts, because that's where the fees will accumulate, rather than through PIAB.
Well, the solicitor will have to inform them that this is an option available to any potential claimant. So there is a responsibility on the solicitors to inform them of PIAB, or as it is now known, the PIRB. But we're also, as I said, as part of the reforms introduced, giving the PIRB greater powers in the whole area of carrying out public information campaign, so that the general public themselves are aware that this is an option that will ensure their legitimate insurance claim can be dealt with in a timely, cost-efficient manner.
So would it be the first port of call for an injured person to ring the PIRB or ring their solicitor?
Ring the PIRB.
And they will they give advice as to how to take the case? How would the process work?
And when you put in an insurance, when you have an accident, the first port of call is you call the insurance company. And then when a claim has been submitted, you can ring the PIRB and a process will begin. That process will then go through the various stages. If either party rejects what has been proposed, then normally it would have gone down the legal route. This time, we're introducing a mediation service. So there's an opportunity that even if one of the parties to the claim disputes an element, disputes all of the claim, or disputes an element of a claim, there will be an opportunity to enter into mediation. And I think, you know, mediation has proven in other circumstances that where there's a dispute, working under with an independent mediator can help bring about a resolution, and that's why we introduced that element to this reforms.
Now, back to the change you mentioned, where if the court award is not greater than the assessment that the PIRB would give, the claimant will not recover costs and may even be liable for the respondent's costs. How will they know in advance which is likely to be the bigger settlement?
Not following, William.
Okay, so you're saying the court award, if the court award isn't greater than what the PIRB will give you, you cannot know that in advance. So how can you then turn around to somebody who in good faith went through the courts with their solicitor and say, you're not going to get your costs back because the PIRB would have given you the same amount or more?
Well, you see, what both bodies are working towards now is we have introduced the personal injury guidelines. The personal injury guidelines are legislated for, and both parties are working to the exact same guidelines. So there should be no disparity. The guidelines have brought clarity in terms of the awards that are available for specific injuries, but they've also brought consistency. So both bodies are working towards the accept guidelines. There is always an opportunity in more complex cases, or where maybe somebody feels, based on the medical evidence that they may get more. But that is a risk that somebody is going to take if they feel that there's compounding evidence that they will get additional compensation by going down the litigation route. That is their choice. Mm. But based on the fact that we have now personal injury guidelines legislated for, that provides clarity, that provides consistency. So there is no benefit in going down the litigation route, but there is cost associated with that. And if somebody wants to take that risk, well, unfortunately, if they do get the exact same award, there will be a consequence for that.
So you mentioned as well the fraud measure, which is always, unfortunately, in the insurance industry, a challenge and an additional cost. So what would be the consequences for somebody who misleads the PIRB?
Well, fraud is a matter for An Garda Síochána. And obviously, one of the, in the action plan for insurance reforms, one of the actions was to establish an insurance fraud coordination office within the National Economic Crime Bureau with An Garda Síochána. That has now been completed and has received additional resources, additional staff. During our pre-legislative scrutiny, and in fact, Senator Ronan Mullen brought forward a proposal in the Shannon in relation to specifically outlining a section in this bill, making an offence to provide false or misleading information to this body. And having consulted with the Attorney General, it was found that it would enhance the bill, and that's why we included it. But ultimately, fraud is a matter that is dealt with by An Garda Síochána, but this is just clearly and explicitly containing this legislation, which will enhance the bill going forward.
It's a bill, so it has yet to be enacted. What's the timetable you're working to?
Well, we've carried out a good bit of preparatory work in terms of we did a public consultation, which was fed into quite substantially. We've completed our pre-legislative scrutiny through the Joint Oireachtas Committee, and it's fair to say that we got a good cross-party support in relation to that. The bill has now been published. I've spoken with the Chief Whip's office to try and get it on the agenda for early when the Dáil resumes, which I anticipate that will happen. And given, as I said, the broad cross-party support for the bill, I would see no reason why this bill cannot be enacted within the first 2 months of the next Dáil term, but at the very latest, before the end of the year.
Robert Troy, Minister of State for Trade Promotion, Digital and Company Regulation. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Maul has texted to say, I'm not into legal stuff, but as a layperson, that bill sounds like it's to handcuff claimants. Maybe a good thing, but sounds complicated and expensive. Brian in Athlone says, waffle. Insurance claims have always been mired in red tape, and it sounds like more jobs for the boys. Will it reduce insurance costs? Years waiting for change? Nothing new here, he says. And on WhatsApp, Liz says she absolutely adores Miriam Margolyes and would have loved to have been in Shannon Bridge yesterday when she paid a visit to the River Cafe. Well, hopefully we'll hear more about that. If you're wondering, who is Miriam? Harry Potter, Professor Sprout. And, well, she's made many hilarious appearances on The Graham Norton Show and on TikTok, indeed, as well, herself. Ooh, that's coming up a little later. We have, by the way, a lady who went to ABBA Voyage to see the Avatars, or Avatars as they are, Ellen Butler from The Newsroom.
Yes, indeed.
Big fan.
A massive fan, yeah. This was a very, I suppose, momentous occasion.
You and Mummy Butler.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah. Two big fans.
Went to London.
Yeah.
At huge expense, no doubt.
not really, actually. We were just discussing off air the hotels, even the tickets for ABBA Voyage were not that much, like compared to what you pay for a gig here. I think maybe 80 quid, which is steep.
Yeah,
but for this experience, like.
What's Bruce Springsteen charging in Dublin?
Yeah, exactly. No offense, Bruce, so I wouldn't be paying that for him. So, and I know I get people are like, you're going to see, it's not actual ABBA, are you well in the head? But it was the next best thing, really.
We've only seen it on video, the rest of us. So you see the lasers and you see the avatars, and it's hard to assess from video how real the experience feels.
And they asked us not to be taking any photos or videos inside, not to shatter the illusion for the mystery for anyone going. It's more than holograms. It's not holograms for anyone wondering. Basically, the four ABBA members put on these suits, CGI kind of thing, and acted out the show a few months back. It was recorded. So that's why it's so lifelike, is because it's literally the way they would move, turn their head, turn their hand, the microphone, anything. And it was recorded, and then it was like, it was screens at the end of the day, but we were sitting there and everyone around was sitting there going, like, are they actually there? It was so lifelike, I couldn't believe
the
it.
The illusion is brilliant. Yeah, and how long is the show?
It's 90 minutes. No interval or anything. And apparently they're actually going to, because they purpose-built an arena in London for this, which came to quite a cost, I believe. So they're going to just keep this going forever, ultimately, really. And
I've
going
also
to
heard that actually the arena can be dismantled.
Yeah.
And moved.
It would be great.
So they can go on tour.
At the moment, you have to go to London if you want to see this. But they're going to actually change the set list so you could go back again and hear a whole new show, which I might do. Who knows? But like the light show, kind of the whole staging of it was really impressive. They obviously wanted to, I suppose, compensate for the fact that ABBA aren't actually there. But you had the current day ABBA voicing a few lines in between songs. And even they were like, this is really weird, isn't it? But look, we're delighted to be able to bring our music to you. I think the last time they played London was 1979. So it's a bit mad. But
and it's a brilliant business model because for decades to come.
Indeed,
they will be earning royalties long after they're gone.
Yeah, and the likes of Queen and whoever else who've been and gone or have lost a couple of members along the way can totally reenact what was,
Ellen, thanks very much. Interesting on the prices, by the way, in London compared to here. You'd always associate London as a far more expensive destination.
Yeah. Goes to show the current state of affairs here and in Dublin.
Times are changing. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Will.
That's Ellen Butler from the news team. Now, still to come, businesses in Mullingar enjoying bumper trade in hospitality. Certainly pubs are doing well, restaurants are doing well, hotels booked up across a wide radius. Some have had to change their business model a little bit if they're in retail, and you'll hear from some of them after the news at 10. Good morning. In a moment, it's not every day that Professor Sprout from Harry Potter walks into your cafe. You'll hear what happened in Cantyoffaly in the last 24 hours. Also, from 10:30, Apple promises to get rid of passwords for good. So how do you secure your account from now on then? And how a beautician's in Mullingar is reinventing to cash in on the fla. It's 1-800-300-103. That's my number. You can tap 083-3010-103. Get involved. Even just say hello. And caller of the day, winning tickets to the Tullamore Show, Sunday week, the 14th of August. All of the trade stands back, all of the machinery demos, the craft village, the food pavilion. The list goes on and on and on. And it'll be bigger and better than ever. Now, to a generation of Harry Potter fans, Miriam Margolyes was the irrepressible Professor Sprout. In which case, she needs no introduction, but to many others, she is a hilarious but filthy-minded talk show guest who has absolutely no filter, as she has proven on The Graham Norton Show time and again.
I parked on a double yellow line in Shaftesbury Avenue. It was the day of the state opening of Parliament. And I rushed up to give an audio tape, because, you know, I do audio tapes, to my agent. And I came downstairs. There was a policeman pasting a parking ticket on my windscreen. And I was just furious because I'd only been there for a minute. And so, you know, I tore it off the windscreen and I said, "You've got a d- that small." Because I thought the best thing is to insult him as quickly as possible.
Of course.
And he took umbrage, didn't like it, and he arrested me for a breach of the peace and parking on a double yellow line. And then he called for help from other policemen, and there were lots about because it was the state opening of Parliament and, you know, they're mingling around. And so I was taken in a police car to Bow Street Police Station. And there I was arraigned. And they said, empty your handbag. And I had a few things in my handbag, and one of them was a packet of peppermints. But they're wrapped in silver paper, you see, and that the detective in charge thought that it was drugs. And he said, you know, what have we got here then? That's interesting. And I said, it's just a packet of peppermints, officer. And he said, no, I think we better check you out, matron. And he got the matron to come and put me in a room privately. And I knew because I was sharp that she was going to give me an internal examination. I just knew that. Nothing had been said, but I knew it. So when she locked the door, she went out for a bit. I took all my clothes off immediately. Well, you would, you know you're going to be examined. And she came back in and she said, you've been here before.
That is Miriam on the Graham Norton show not so long ago. And yesterday, she turned up, in all places, the River Cafe in Shannon Bridge, where Katie Moran is here to tell the story. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
I presume she arrived with her clothes on.
She did, thankfully, or she wouldn't have been let in, I don't think.
And she wasn't illegally parked outside?
No, all legal.
And she didn't get arrested?
She didn't, know.
Okay, good. How did this unfold?
So we had a group booked in to the cafe of about 9 people, and we obviously weren't told that a famous actress was in the mix of it, so we just treated them like any normal group, and we sat them down, and they were really, really friendly, and we were talking away to them, and we were quite busy at the time, so we didn't really overanalyze who was in the group, and that was fine, and they'd gotten their food and they got dessert as well, and she actually said that it was one of the nicest coffee cakes she'd ever had.
Ooh, high praise.
Yeah, so the chefs are delighted anyway. And then as they were going out the door, they'd gotten tea and coffee to take away and sit outside, and they were going out the door, and we were kind of there saying, she looks like a little bit of a familiar face. And the people on the table beside them then said that she's a famous actress, and then it kind of clicked with us all, oh my god, she was in Harry Potter. And we were all major Harry Potter fans.
I was about to ask, if you were to give on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being a major fan, where would you be on the scale?
Oh, probably 12.
Okay.
I always loved Harry Potter. I've read all the books and been over to the studio tour and everything in London. So it was, once we kind of figured out who she was, we were starstruck. It was crazy.
So you went into fangirl mode.
We did, yeah. I did. We went out, and then she was such a lovely woman to begin with, and even after we realised that it was her, she was so friendly and had no problem with us getting a picture of her, with her or anything like that.
And did you converse? Did she have anything to say apart from complimenting the cake?
Oh, they were explaining how they're on a road trip around Ireland filming a documentary about Lady Gregory that will be shown on RTÉ1 in a couple of months. So they just had a little pit stop in Shannon Bridge, which was crazy.
Very good. That explains it. So we'll be possibly seeing that in the not too distant future on the telly. Lady Gregory, for those who don't know, she was an Irish dramatist. She co-founded the Irish Literary Theatre, the Abbey Theatre, along with W.B. Yeats and people of that ilk. So this should be a very interesting watch.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be looking out for it anyway after the other day.
And so did she spend long with you?
She was there for a good while, yeah. The group was happy out. They were there having coffee and cake, as I said, after their meal. And then they sat out by the Shannon for about half an hour afterwards, drinking their coffee, which was crazy.
Lovely. Katie, thank you very much for sharing the story. I'm sure it's a day you're not going to forget in a hurry. And for anybody who visits the River Cafe, what was the cake she recommended?
The coffee cake, coffee and walnut cake.
You'll have to call it Miriam's coffee and walnut cake from now on.
We definitely will be. Anyway, we'll be mentioning it to anyone who has it.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you. Bye.
Katie Moran from River Cafe in Shannon Bridge. Barbara would like to know if there are any buses travelling to and from Mullingar this weekend from Tullamore. So if you're in the Tullamore area, you're heading to the FLA, you've arranged a bus, you might just let us know. Or if you're an operator and you're going to do this of your own back, 083 30 10 103, send us a message and we'll make people aware of it for you. Speaking of the FLA, it has been an absolutely bumper couple of days, especially for hotels and restaurants and pubs. And some businesses are changing their normal trading habits in order to accommodate the 500,000 people who are in town for the event. One beautician has closed the salon for a week, but is now selling tea and coffee instead. Midlands 103's Chloe Farrell has been out and about, meeting many traders, getting their views on the traditional music festival, and she begins this report with Brendan Cullen from Fuji Coffee and Tea Shop.
The FLA has been really good for us. We opened at 7 in the morning and we've actually opened quite late for the FLA. So normally we close at 7 p.m. but we've actually opened up for 10 p.m. and one of the nights we actually stayed open until nearly 11, and we found a lot of designated drivers were coming up to us. Not everybody drinks at the FLA. It's very family orientated. The weather is great here in Mullingar. It's nice for people to be able to walk up and down the middle of the street and enjoy the fresh air without the pollution of the cars. And it's great to meet all the different people. We've had customers in from all over the world. Japan, France, Germany. We've got a couple of German people sitting over there now at the moment. So really enjoying the FLA, and I hope we get it again here in Mullingar next year, and I think it's been a great success.
My name is Elaine McCormack. I run Gemini Hair and Beauty in Pierce Street in Mullingar. I have completely rejigged the business. I have a beauty salon on the first floor, and I have taken down to the ground floor and I have opened up a coffee hut. We're also giving a braid service for the younger clients. My salon is closed, but I'm downstairs and I'm in the middle of the whole thing in Pierce Street.
So are you enjoying the changes for the week?
I am thoroughly enjoying it. I'm so proud of Mullingar. The people are fantastic. I think the streets are just packed every single day and night. I'm here from 8 o'clock in the morning and I'm not home till 10 o'clock at night. I'm loving every single bit of it, and as I said, I'm so, so proud of Mullingar. They have just done so fantastic. I'm getting a great buzz, 100%. It's just great. The buzz is just unreal. We have musicians right beside us sitting outside, and we are giving them obviously free tea and coffee and a few drinks and stuff like that, but I'm absolutely loving every bit of it.
My name is Dara Walsh, here in Walsh Jewellers on Oliver Plunkett Street. It's actually my parents who run the business, but we weren't expecting to sell a lot of jewellery during the FLA, so we do have the history of Mullingar range that people are looking at, and we've sold a couple of pieces, but just in the meantime we decided to sell some sweets and drinks and stuff, thinking that we'd get more trade that way than anything else. So.
And has that kept the business?
Well, it's taken over, yeah. I mean, better days on Monday wasn't great because of the rain, but yeah, it's taken over. There's good crowds in the town, so getting a bit going through, yeah.
So I'm Sinead Deegan. I'm working in O'Brien's All Care Pharmacy in the middle of the town, in Oliver Plunkett Street. Yeah, so it's made a bit of a difference to our regular customers, I suppose, because it's a little bit harder for them to get into town, what with the town being closed off. So we probably are a little bit quieter than we would usually be, but we've got nice passing traffic and a few new people and new faces in, so look at it, it's been okay. There's great atmosphere on the street, in fairness. Anybody that does come in is in pretty good form, so it's nice nice to see. And look, we're in the middle of it here, so we can stand outside and have a listen to the music and a look at the dancing and everything. So it's keeping us entertained, shall we say, whether we're a little bit quieter or not.
Tom Nally, Rochford's Dominic Street, Mullingar. It's been fantastic. We had a huge opening day. The Sunday was absolutely brilliant. The streets were thronged. The weather didn't go well on Monday, but sure, we can't do anything about that. But in general, the place is thriving. We're open 6 in the morning till 2 in the morning every night. So even at night time there's loads of people up and down the street, and it's flying. It's huge for Mullingar, and we're absolutely delighted with all the effort that was put in.
And have you done anything to prepare for the FLA?
Yeah, we've expanded a lot of stuff. We have the music and we have our ice cream. It's the only place you can get a banjo or a 99. But we've done a lot of advertising. We've taken in some speciality instrument, lyre whistles and that, which would be an internationally famous whistle. We're doing a pop-up shop for them. And we've expanded our ice cream and our pizza offerings as well. So we put a lot into it, but we're getting it back. It's great. There's a huge amount around.
And that report by Midlands 103's Chloe Farrell. Next, how Apple intends to get rid of passwords forever, and how a wrist-worn tracker will tell you if you have COVID-19 even before your symptoms develop. Catherine says, "Well, I'm listening to all the great feedback from the Mullingar FLA. I'm heading there on Sunday. But I'd also like those 2 tickets for the Tullamore show on Sunday week." Well, you could become caller of the day with a message like that. Who knows? 083-3010-103. Text or WhatsApp. And if you want, you can pick up the phone, talk to Sinead on 0818-300-103. Lots to get through on Talking Tech with Andy in just a few minutes, such as how Oxford City Football Club will be accepting Bitcoin payments, and that amazing story of the man who threw away £150 million. In Bitcoin, by the way. But he has a plan to find it again. Oh, and many a session will be breaking out in Mullingar between now and Sunday. No update on the bus. A few people have asked if there are buses planning to leave from Tullamore to Mullingar at the weekend. And if you know of one, or indeed if you're running one, let us know and we'll pass on the message. How could you have a world without passwords? Well, Apple believes it's possible to do away with them for good. And that's where we shall begin as we talk tech with Andy O'Donoghue from RedCert.com. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Will.
Have you ever counted how many passwords do you have?
Oh, well, too many. And of course, the advice is that we should have a different password for every service, and we should use a special mechanism for making them up, picking words that are familiar to us and take the second and the third letter and all this kind of stuff. The truth is that we all have too many passwords, and we often reuse passwords, which, of course, is a dangerous thing to do and brings joy to hackers. However, the story, of course, now is that Apple, they have a very ambitious plan to try and rid the world of passwords. And what they've done is they've joined forces with Microsoft and Google under what's called the FIDO Alliance. And each of those companies is going to release kind of its own method of doing this. And in the autumn, when iOS 16 comes out and on the Apple devices, it's going to use a thing called passkeys. And the idea is that passwords will be a thing of the past.
So what is a passkey?
Passkeys are these strings of information. And by that, I mean kind of a length of text, a number of characters. And it's stored on your device. And this is sort of branches into cryptography, which is the kind of the science or the technology of keeping information safe. And it's like a digital signature that can't be copied and far more secure than a password. And it's on this principle that that Apple and the other companies are going to do this, so that we won't, and the great thing, of course, is we won't have to remember passwords. The use of passkeys has been around for a while, and companies like Apple and Google have in the past started to use things like recognition of our faces or our retinas or our fingerprints. And this is, I suppose, the long-term plan, in that passkeys will be able to eradicate passwords. And so it's all about us as an individual. So it's your presence that's important, and your passkey will be stored on the device. So it never gets sent or transmitted. And that looks like the secret sauce, or the answer to this challenge.
Now, when you have the facial recognition on your phone, or the thumbprint recognition, there's always a backup, whether it's to put in a lock code or whatever, ultimately is a form of password. So are we going to have a backup if, for instance, you lose your device?
It's a great point, Will. And many companies use a thing now, or recommend using an app called an authenticator. And Microsoft make one, Google have one. And these are those one-time only passwords. For quite a while, for a number of years, we relied very heavily on SMS codes, simple text messages. So when we logged in to, say, the bank or another service, we would get a text message with a 4 or 6 digit code, and we'd type that in. The problem that's happened is that it turns out that it's not all that difficult to hack the messaging system of mobile phone companies, and it has happened around the world. Now, generally, this is a sophisticated hack, not sort of, you know, a teenager in a hoodie, but nevertheless, it can be done. So the authenticators on the devices kind of looks a little bit like the solution that Apple are going for. But your question is really relevant, because what if you lose that mobile phone or you get a new one? And the truth is that certifying our identity will become a little bit more labor intensive, because you will, if you get a new phone, you'll have to download the app or verify that it's you. And that may be done by a text message, by an email, and by referring to previous identity that you supplied. What it does mean, though, Will, is that I think we're heading to a less anonymous internet than we've had in the past, because identity is incredibly valuable.
Mm. But therefore, perhaps a more accountable internet as well, if people can't be as anonymous online and the trolls have nowhere to hide. Now, this story, I think many a farmer will get a kick out of. So, a chap in New South Wales in Australia, Mick Miners, he ventured out one morning and saw something black sticking out of the ground, and at first thought, ooh, this must be a dead tree. Not so.
Not so. I mean, this is truly a remarkable story. And the Australian Space Agency have issued a statement. And it looks like what was sticking out of Mick Miner's field in Australia was a piece of the SpaceX capsule. And this, many of your listeners will be familiar with Elon Musk, and one of the companies that he runs is called SpaceX, and they launch rockets into space, and they bring supplies to the International Space Station, and they also have a constellation of satellites called Starlink that you and I have chatted about in the past, that provides broadband around the globe, incredibly fast broadband. And part of one of those rockets essentially space junk gets discarded in space. Most of it burns up as it re-enters the atmosphere. But in this case, last weekend, Mick Miners contacted an astrophysicist, Dr. Brad Tucker at the Australian National University. He went out and discovered that, given the makeup and composition, that it was a huge chunk of the SpaceX capsule that had managed to make its way through the Earth's atmosphere and had plummeted and embedded itself, standing about 6 or 7 foot tall in Mick Miner's field. And truly remarkable. Thankfully, no people or animals were nearby.
Yeah, indeed. That would make a most interesting personal injury case, wouldn't it?
It does show the danger of space junk. And China recently came under collected some heat about this recently, about one of their rockets. Now we have SpaceX, an American company. The truth is, as we launch more missions to space, and we launch far more than people realize, satellite launches and others, other missions go on. It's something that I think companies and countries really need to tell us about this.
Mm. Would you take the case in the country where you were injured? Would you take the case in the country where the satellite took off? It's fascinating. And maybe just
call Elon Musk and say, do you want a piece of your rocket back?
Yeah. Anyway, thankfully, very rare. Oxford City Football Club is going to accept Bitcoin payments. We'll be chatting about that in a moment. And also a man who may be giving them some Bitcoin if he can find his hard drive. If only you had invested in cryptocurrency when it was in its infancy, you could be a multi-millionaire today. Well, one guy had the foresight to do this, and he stored the cryptocurrency, the Bitcoin, on his hard drive. And then things went horribly wrong. Andy, tell us about James Howells.
It's a dreadful story, and you're it really makes you feel incredibly bad for the guy James Howells. But almost 10 years ago, he started mining Bitcoin, and that's the mechanism whereby you get a big fancy computer and you run this kind of discovery algorithm software, and Bitcoin pops up. And you get to keep what you find. And that's still the mechanism on how Bitcoin is mined, far more sophisticated now. But he mined somewhere between 7,500 and 8,000 Bitcoins back in starting in 2013. And at some point, Will, his computer packed up and he needed to get a new one. So he did that and decided to throw away the old one. However, during that process, at some point, the hard drive, which he probably removed and disposed of separately, ended up going out in the rubbish and ending up in a council tip in Wales, in Newport. And on it is the key to his 8,000 Bitcoin, which today would be worth about 180 million euros.
Wow. That was an expensive mistake. He's been trying to rectify it ever since.
He has. And he has, I suppose he's engaged with the council to try and get them to help him excavate the site. And he now has a plan, a very sophisticated plan that he says will cost somewhere between 6 and 11 million euros to put in place. And it involves hiring artificial intelligence experts, robot dogs, believe it or not, who will help in the search and also act as CCTV, and could take about 18 months. And he wants to excavate the site, which means dig it up and go through all of the rubbish underneath.
Sounds expensive.
And very expensive. I mean, you know, somewhere from 6 to 10 or 11 million euros. Mm. The council don't want him to do it because they say that, you know, at this point, there is now grass growing on this site, on this landfill. Hazardous material or methane could be released into the atmosphere. James Howell says that he'll give 25% of what he recovers to the town and make it a crypto center. Will he ever be successful, Will? I don't know. But with that much money at stake for James Howells, I think hope springs eternal.
Indeed. And, well, no guarantees he would find it even after all of that effort, or that it would be in recoverable condition. So quite a risk. Now, staying with Bitcoin, talk to us about the football club that's going to accept Bitcoin payments.
So football has had quite a, almost at this stage, a long in kind of association with Bitcoin. Man City, Barcelona, Juventus have partnered with the crypto platform Socius, as have Leeds United, who've issued a fan token on the Chili's platform. However, Oxford City have announced a plan that they will now accept Bitcoin from fans buying tickets and food and drinks at the Raw Charging Stadium. And starting this Saturday as they play, they're playing Eastbourne, and you'll be able to pay using Bitcoin. And they've produced kind of a little credit card or charge card or debit card called the Bolt card. It's contactless card for Bitcoin. And essentially, as well as buying your tickets, you'll be able to go to the stadium and you want to get a burger and a drink at halftime. You pay with your Bolt card and essentially you're paying with your Bitcoin, which is a fascinating development.
I haven't seen anywhere in the Midlands of Ireland doing this. Maybe in Dublin? Have you come across it in Ireland, Andy?
Well, it's not, you wouldn't know that they're doing it, Will, but you can pay. For instance, there are a dozen reputable companies or more. Say the huge company Coinbase issue the Coinbase card. And if you go into any of your local shops, you can pay with your Coinbase debit card. Mm. However, that debit card accesses your crypto wallet and you can decide to pay in Bitcoin or Ether, whatever you kind of have it topped up with. So when you go to the counter and you pay for your coffee, pay your €2.50 for a cup of coffee, you're actually paying in Bitcoin. So it's an invisible transaction, but it all happens at the back end. Fascinating to see this happening. Bitcoin prices, of course, have taken a battering since Christmas, down about 40% or whatever. But it does show when you start to see big organizations, getting involved, the likes of Oxford starting to do this, Oxford United doing this. Crypto's here to stay, whether we like it or not. And I think it's kind of, yes, it's good publicity for them, but it's also kind of fun for the fans.
Yeah, crypto at the moment, Bitcoin, $22,862 if you've some loose change. Last November, $68,000. So quite volatile. Let's conclude with COVID-19. And before the whole Midlands lets off a big, big groan, a bit of good news in terms of technological developments.
Yes, absolutely. This is worthwhile having a think about, because particularly as we come to the autumn and given, the potential infection rates of new variants of COVID from the Omicron strain, Fitbit wearers, Apple Watch wearers, there's been an amount of research over the last few months that health trackers will be able to detect COVID-19 early, simply because they're very good at spotting basic physiological changes. And that can be things like skin temperature and your breathing, which all of these trackers monitor. And so it looks like these wrist-borne trackers will be able to spot the fact that you have COVID maybe 2 or 3 days before your symptoms appear. So it could prompt you to take a test at home, or it could prompt you to isolate. Worthwhile, and as fitness trackers become so common almost, you see them so often, Will, it's a nice feature that we didn't know they had, but reassuring.
Will it be available on existing models through software upgrades, or are you going to have to go out and buy something bespoke, which presumably very few people will?
Yeah, and there are bespoke devices, but I don't think you need one. The key thing is that if they measure your breathing and they measure your skin temperature, and say the new Apple Watch and the new Fitbits, the new Huawei's and the new Garmin's all do that. So if you're spending sort of €150 or more for those kind of higher spec models, I think that's they're the ones that you probably need to be thinking about.
Ah, so I didn't have my homework done, but I have a note from my watch. Andy, thanks very much.
Thanks, Will.
Andy O'Donoghue from redcert.com. Now, that's where we leave it today. Sinead Hubble put the programme together and is already working on Friday's edition. We will be continuing the conversation next as Nevin Maguire, celebrity chef, sits down with Brian Cunningham on That's Life in association with Kinnity Castle. And later today, Midlands 103, live again from Mullingar for Fla Ciol na hÉireann. So enjoy the rest of your day. Oh, caller of the day. Yes, caller of the day. Ooh, who will we pick, Sinead? Now, that's my revenge. The lady who started the show by depriving her presenter of a running order has not selected a competition winner to receive tickets to the Tullamore show on Sunday week. And will I waffle about all the virtues of it, or will I just sit here in silence? She's raising a finger, saying one moment. That's fine. Weather's nice at the moment, isn't it? Chat among yourselves there for a minute. Tickets go to Geraldine Fleming in Tullamore. Well done, Geraldine.